This is The Morning Show. I'm John Munson. According to President Donald Trump, the tax bill passed by Congress is, quote, an incredible Christmas gift for hardworking Americans, end quote. We'll discuss what's in the package and examine the political fallout. We also look at the possibility of a government shutdown this weekend. So how do you feel about the Republican passed tax plan? Will those tax cuts spur economic growth, or are they a giveaway to rich and corporate America? Will America be better or worse off without Obamacare's individual mandate? And how do you feel about the possibility of a government shutdown? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, the Ideas Network Facebook page, or you can tweet at WPR Mornings. All of those great ways to get in touch and let us know what you think and what your questions are on this important topic. My guest is Stephen Smith, a distinguished professor of social sciences, professor of political science, and director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. Stephen Smith, welcome to The Morning Show.
Thanks, John. Great to be with you.
President Trump called the tax bill a historic victory for the American people and an incredible Christmas gift for hardworking Americans. Who's going to be the happiest with this legislation?
Corporations and people who make a lot of money off of corporations. There's a 40% permanent tax cut for corporations, changing the tax rate for corporations from 35% to 21%. And so if you make your money largely on investments in corporations, they're going to be making more money simply by reducing their tax rate. In addition, if they're international corporations and they're able to bring repatriate some of their reserves that are being held elsewhere and haven't been taxed yet, they can bring that back in temporarily anyway at about a 15% tax rate. And much of that will be returned to stockholders in the form of dividends. Sometimes the corporations will buy back stock, and of course that'll benefit the stockholders. So there is primarily a benefit for corporate America. In terms of the distribution on the personal income tax side, it's the higher income brackets that over the course of the lifespan of this bill, which is essentially 10 years because that's how it's budgeted, they'll see the larger percentage increases in income due to the changes in taxes they have to pay. So for incomes over roughly $700,000, they're likely to see something like a $50,000 cut in taxes on an annualized basis. And that's a pretty sizable tax cut. And it represents a higher percentage of their taxes, currently paid taxes, than for the lower income brackets. If you're in the very lowest income brackets, $10,000, $20,000, as many students are, many service workers are, the average tax changes are likely to be maybe $100 in a year, depending upon the specifics of your case.
Well, and for college students, particularly graduate school students, and this bill has changed so many times in the details that it's hard to know exactly what's still in it. But at one point, they were talking about the stipends and so forth that graduate students get being considered taxable income now. And tuition waivers and so forth, making it much more expensive to go to graduate school than it used to be. So for those people, that would be that would represent a pretty good hardship.
It would have, but they did drop any changes with respect to how graduate student tuition remuneration is handled. The original Senate plan provided that a graduate student, these are usually PhD students, so the top students, who receive a basically free tuition and a stipend. The stipend is basically for serving as a research or a teaching assistant. Stipends generally run around $20,000, and they're taxed on that. That's such a low income that, of course, they don't pay much taxes. But if they go to a major research university and are paying out-of-state, would otherwise pay out-of-state tuition, they might be paying $20,000 or $25,000 in tuition. Now, they get that for free in most of these PhD programs, but under the original plan, that tuition benefit would have been taxed and greatly increased their taxes while not changing their dollar income at all. Now, they have dropped that, and so there's no change with respect to how tuition is taxed in the bill that passed.
Well, that's great news. Who's going to be the most upset by this bill, do you think?
Well, I think there are going to be a bunch of people who are in the middle and upper middle income classes who are earning $100,000, $200,000, $300,000. And of course, that includes many two-earner families, many professional families. If they have no children and they are now going to be, and they have homes, they're benefiting from property tax deductions. If they're in a high tax state, even like Wisconsin, and they're paying an income tax, they're going to find that their state and local property and income tax deduction is very limited. It's limited to $10,000, and chances are they've been deducting more, sometimes much more than that. They've lost their personal exemption. Those exemptions have disappeared. So they're likely to end up paying more taxes, not less. And, you know, in some tax brackets, this will be 5 or 10% of people who will be paying more, sometimes substantially more, while others in the same tax bracket, because of the changes in exemptions and other tax breaks, are paying less under the new bill. So it's going to take a while for people to figure out whether they're going to be paying more or paying less. That actually creates some confusion over the next few months, because almost everyone who is salaried, of course, or earns wages, has taxes withheld by their employer on the basis of what their estimated tax is going to be for that year. But estimating what that tax is going to be for tax year 2018 for many people is going to be very complicated, and is going to take some time to figure out. The IRS will have to write some rules and interpretations to give some meat and meaning to the new law, and all that will take time. So while they'll change some of the tax tables employers use for withholding in the next 2 or 3 months, my guess it'll take even longer for the IRS to get sorted out what some of these provisions mean.
Well, you mentioned the personal exemption. I think sometimes people get the personal exemption confused with the standard deduction. And I know that you're not a tax lawyer or an accountant.
That's right.
But do you have any idea? Can you give us an idea of what the difference is between those and how that affects people?
Well, when you fill out your tax form for your employer, you indicate how many exemptions you want, and that is based on largely your family size, which then affects how much tax you pay at the end of the year. For most people, that's around $4,100 right now, and that simply disappears. The standard deduction, which is about $5,000, is doubled to it's $12,000 for an individual. So for people in middle and lower income classes, I think they'll find that the standard deduction actually is more than all their other deductions put together. And so this is going to be the source of their tax break. But if you're above the middle income, and especially for professional families and true earner families, they'll find that this doesn't actually save them money. It's going to cost them a little bit more money. And so whether or not they save on taxes depends on other provisions, other kinds of deductions that they've gained or lost.
Yeah. And of course, we're almost at news time, so I don't want to introduce too many new topics. I will share this email from Paul in Eau Claire. before we go to break, Paul, and then we'll talk about it afterwards. Paul says, I'm a working class homeowner with kids, and the tax bill is going to save me over $2,500 per year in federal taxes. This really is middle class tax relief. So not everyone, every homeowner is unhappy with what Congress passed yesterday. We'll talk some more about this going forward with Stephen Smith, who is my guest this hour. We're talking about the tax bill that was passed yesterday. Stephen Smith is a distinguished professor of social sciences, professor of political science, and director of the Wiedenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. We are going to take a break and check the news, and then we'll be back with more of our discussion. You can join the program at 800-642-1234. You can send us an email. You can post to the Ideas Network Facebook page. All great ways to get in touch. John Munson on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Stick around. Congress passed a big tax bill yesterday, and we're talking about it this hour on The Morning Show. We're also hopefully going to get to the upcoming deadline on a continuing resolution to keep government operating for another few weeks. My guest is Stephen Smith with Washington University in St. Louis. Wondering how you think about the Republican passed tax plan. 800-642-1234. You can email us ideas@WPR.org, post on the Ideas Network Facebook page, or tweet us at WPR Mornings. I want to go back to the corporate tax issue for just a moment, and then we really should move on. But we have a caller, George in Milwaukee, I think has a great question, and let's go there now. George, good morning. Thanks for joining us on The Morning Show.
Thanks. You know, the Republicans like to say that the United States had one of the highest corporate tax rates in the world. In actuality, as done by a number of organizations, it showed that, especially for large corporations, the actual corporate tax rate was closer to around 20% anyway. So my question is, are a lot of loopholes that supposedly were going to go away when they lowered the corporate tax rate to 21%, are a lot of those still in place, so their actual tax rate will be a lot lower than that?
George? Steve here. Yeah, the answer is yes. Most of those deductions were left in place. The original theory of tax reform, of course, was to clean up the tax code on the corporate side. That is, get rid of many of the deductions that benefited companies in one sector of the economy or another, but usually not all, in order to lower the playing field, so to speak, and to get the government out of the business of picking winners and losers in corporate America. But they did very little of that. But they all benefit from the reduction in the rate. So many of them will continue to benefit from various tax breaks that they've enjoyed in the past. The law also extended additional breaks in some cases. For example, depreciation of investments related to investments in equipment can all be done in 1 year rather than being spread over many years, which makes it cheaper for companies to buy new equipment. Of course, that's the whole point of it, but it also gives them a bigger tax break.
George, thanks so much for that call. Well, there's been a lot of discussion about, well, the effective tax rate, which is what actually the tax that corporations pay, is quite a bit less than 21%, isn't it?
It will be, yeah, because many of those deductions will remain in place, and some, as I say, are even more generous than they were in the past. Mm. So all corporations will be down to the 21%, and most will be down at to some point below that.
At one time, and again, there's been so much talk about what was in this bill at various points and all the negotiations that took place. We saw a dramatic video from the Senate when they were taking it up, the bill coming in with all sorts of margin notes written in, handwritten. So it's sometimes difficult to know what's in and what's out. But at one point, there was discussion about the fact that if a person was That certain small business owners who aren't incorporated necessarily would no longer be able to deduct their business-related expenses, which is a pretty big deal because that's a deduction that comes, it's not part of your itemized deductions, that's a straight-up deduction that you take at the end that really reduces your tax exposure. Do you know if that made the final version of the bill? I wasn't able to find that out.
Well, I don't know all the details, but for the most part, what I do know is that most of the standard costs of business that are deductible under the current law will continue to be deductible. The pass-through income, which many sole proprietors benefit from, that's the kind of income that because you own your own little business or you're in a law partnership or some other kind of arrangement that's not incorporated, it's so-called pass-through income. You're paying the income tax at your personal income tax rate. Thanks in part to Senator Johnson of Wisconsin, there is now a 20% deduction right off the top for that kind of pass-through income up to a certain limit. That'll help small businesses considerably and will allow them to be paying at tax rates far, far less than those who earn their income through wages or salary.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. That's the number to call to join the program. George, thank you for your call, 800-642-1234. There are other cuts in this package as well. President Trump made it clear yesterday that those reductions are the crux of this whole tax bill. Take a listen to this.
A lot of reform in there, but the tax cuts supersede. And I said very specifically, use the word tax cuts. You know, for 34 years, they've been trying to do this, and they haven't. And they use the word reform. Well, there is reform, but I said we're going to be talking about tax cuts.
Would you, Professor, would you primarily describe this as tax reform or tax cuts, and why?
Well, definitely tax cuts. The tax reform notion over the last generation, essentially, was to produce a tax bill that was deficit neutral. That is, it reduced rates, therefore reducing revenues, but it recovered new revenues by eliminating a lot of these special tax breaks given to one part of the economy or another. And so the idea was to make it kind of revenue neutral, to make it balanced, adding taxes by eliminating breaks, but reducing rates overall. And that has actually been the Republican plan for probably 30 or 40 years. I remember in the 70s, that was more or less their claim. We can clean up the tax code. The 1986 tax bill, famously under President Reagan, was more or less revenue neutral and was considered to be a major accomplishment and actually received bipartisan support because it both cleaned up the code and reduced rates. But this tax bill did not go in that direction. I think there was some hope at the very beginning of the process that new sources of revenue could be found. Remember, there was talk, thanks to Congressman Ryan, of a border tax, changing how we price tariffs and other kinds of sources of revenue at the border that would raise money, at least in the first few years, so that we could cut taxes and the overall package would be revenue neutral. But that idea went nowhere. And so since that time, since the early 2017, when that idea basically died, the Republicans have pushed a plan that would create a loss of revenue on net of up to $1.5 trillion, and that's what their budget provided for. And this one comes pretty close to that.
Well, we had an email from Matt in Wausau. Matt writes, I'm surprised the Democratic pundits aren't pointing out the addition to the deficit this tax break represents. After years of railing on how the deficit is unsustainable, what do Republicans do with the first majority tax reform legislation? Increase the deficit by $1.5 trillion. Trickle-down economics doesn't work and hasn't worked anywhere ever. Republican voters remind me of Charlie Brown continually trusting Lucy to hold the football for a kick, then being continually disappointed when she pulls the ball away at the last moment. Well, the whole idea here is that these tax cuts are going to spark an economic growth unlike anything we've ever seen before. At least that's the way this is being marketed. Professor, is that in fact what we think is going to happen?
No. I think the consensus among serious, reasonably independent economists is that it'll spark a little bit of growth, maybe not even 1% additional growth over a 10-year period. So by the best estimates, there will be some additional growth, and that actually then produces some additional revenue, but it doesn't come close to compensating for the loss of revenue due to the cuts in taxes. So the net cost of this bill is probably somewhere between $1 trillion and $1.5 trillion because of a few hundred billion dollars of additional revenue due to very modest increases in growth. I should add, though, that all the changes on the personal side, Paul mentioned that his family is going to save $2,500 in taxes. All those changes on the personal side are dead in 2025. So they're not permanent. They will have to be reauthorized at that point. Now, that's important in this discussion because if they extend those personal tax deductions in 2025 so they don't disappear and everyone's taxes go back up, then the implications for the deficit are even greater. And, of course, that would increasing taxes relative to the current policy and would have a negative effect on the economy. Mm-hmm. So the effect on the economy is small and actually could be partially reversed. If Congress fails to act as the Republicans now promise they will in 2025.
We have an email and a phone call about the same topic. I'm going to share them both at the same time. We'll do the email first, and then I'll go to our caller. We have an emailer from Auburndale, Rhonda, who writes, regardless of how the tax plan impacts individuals, I am concerned about the cuts to social programs and the increase in the deficit. This seems short-sighted. That's what Rhonda writes. Now let's take a call from Madeline in Franklin, who has similar concerns. Madeline, good morning.
Yes, I would like to know what these cuts are going to affect. I have been told that with these cuts, there will be a 4% decrease in Medicare funding, not to mention our schools and our roads. Why should we be happy about this? I don't like it.
Thank you, Madeline. Professor Smith?
Well, as a part of the a deal a few years back in order to avoid a very serious economic crisis, Congress put in place spending and tax standards. And if those standards aren't met, then across-the-board cuts are made automatic. And so this tax bill actually will invoke those and force across-the-board cuts. For Medicare, they are limited, as Madeline suggests, to $25 billion per year, which represents a few percentage, 4%, I think is about right, of Medicare spending. So Congress, the Republican leadership anyway, has promised that they will put in place a waiver so that those across-the-board cuts do not take place. That has not been done yet, and the fear is that they may have some trouble getting the waiver through Congress because there'll be some conservatives who like the idea of cutting domestic programs. Madeline makes a larger point that by shrinking the revenues of the federal government and threatening a larger deficit, there'll be even more pressure to cut domestic programs, largely social programs, and surely that is true.
Republicans have already indicated that one of their high priority items remains what they call welfare reform, but that what they really mean is a broad range of social programs. And we still have a bit of a crisis on health care. We've done away now with the mandate. This tax bill did away with the tax penalty for those who do not carry health insurance. And many of those people are going to then go without insurance, choose to go without insurance, but they'll end up in emergency rooms, and it might put pressure on everyone else's health insurance premiums. And of course, that affects the viability of doctors and hospitals, and ultimately puts pressure on the federal government to increase spending on Medicare and Medicaid. So we have a series of challenges ahead of us due to this large tax cut.
We have some audio from the president on that very thing, the Obamacare individual mandate, thing of the past once this legislation kicks in. President Trump called that an extremely significant detail. Let's hear from the president.
So in this bill, not only do we have massive tax cuts and tax reform, we have essentially repealed Obamacare, and we'll come up with something that will be much better. Whether it's block grants or whether it's taking what we have and doing something terrific.
So Obamacare essentially dead, as the president said, or is this just a piece of it and it will disrupt the system but not completely destroy it?
Well, it's hard to tell, but it's certainly not dead and it's certainly not repealed. Obamacare is still on the books. What is no longer on the books is the tax penalty for not carrying health insurance. But those other provisions of the legislation, for example, the increase in spending on Medicaid that many states benefit from, are still in place. And we might end up seeing some people who would have purchased health care insurance on the exchanges forego that and end up eventually on Medicaid when they run into financial or health problems. So Medicare is still there, but it is now in greater danger of becoming totally ineffective if the exchanges deteriorate further. Now, there are some promises to follow up. The administration, of course, has promised that these subsidies they give to insurance companies so that they can lower rates will not continue. Senator Collins, who voted for the bill, says she was promised that legislation to correct that will be taken up soon. I think she hoped it would be taken up in 2017, and that's not going to happen. She also advocates more federal money to the states so that they can establish high-risk pools that are effective, and that wasn't taken up. She's been promised that that'll be taken up next time. Many economists don't think that that's an adequate substitute because these high-risk pools end up serving only sick people and end up being far more expensive than government is willing to fund on its own. So we're a long way from settling the future of healthcare.
All right. Well, we will take a break for news here in just a moment, and then we'll come back and have more of our discussion yet to come. We still need to talk about this looming deadline to finance the operation of the federal government. 11:59 Friday night. Congress has to act before then to fund government for at least another few weeks or few months, however they decide to do it. And those negotiations going on now. We'll continue our discussion about that and the tax bill after this news break. Stephen Smith is my guest from Washington University in St. Louis. You can join us at 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. What do you think about all of this? Let us know. We've got a lot of phone calls coming in. We'll take those calls after the break. I'm John Munson. This is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We will be right back. We're talking about the big tax bill that was passed yesterday. How do you feel about this Republican-passed tax plan? Will tax cuts spur economic growth, or are they a giveaway to the rich? 800-642-1234. My guest, Stephen Smith, Distinguished Professor of Social Sciences, Professor of Political Sciences, and Director of the Weidenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. We have a CNN poll came out on Tuesday. This is the day before this bill was passed in its final form. A CNN poll came out Tuesday and showed that 55% of Americans oppose the plan, while only 33% support it. Democrats called it a boon to the wealthy while offering little to the middle class. Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer said yesterday that the GOP would soon regret their efforts. Let's hear Chuck.
Republicans will rue the day they pass this bill, and you can bet Democrats will make sure of that. We are going to continue to hammer away at why this bill is so unpopular, at why what the Republican rhetoric and the reality is so far apart.
So are we going to hear about taxes right through the 2018 midterms?
Well, I'm sure we are. The Republicans, I think, hope that most Americans will be on to other issues by that time. I think the Republicans were trying to shore up their base. There were a lot of frustrated Republicans in the country. They bombed out on repealing Obamacare earlier in the year. Didn't get much else accomplished during this year, and I think congressional Republicans were somewhat desperate to show that they could get something done. And this was one big, important tax bill. So it is, from their point of view, a major accomplishment. But it's not popular with middle-of-the-road Americans, and certainly not Democrats. And so they've created a pretty serious problem for themselves. The election's a long way off. They can overcome it. A lot of politics will happen over the next few months. But I think they've created a serious problem for themselves.
Well, I guess time will tell. But I can already hear the ad copy that's being written about this, and we'll certainly see and hear a lot of that. Let's try to take a call. We're having a little bit of a problem with our phone system here today, so let's see if we can get Art in Milwaukee. Art, are you with us?
I am. Thank you.
Yay. Okay. Go ahead. Thank you.
So I have a question about the claim that some of the changes in the tax provisions on corporations is going to bring jobs home from U.S. corporations that are operating abroad. Because when I looked at it, the best I can see is that currently U.S. tax law does tax profits from U.S. corporations abroad, although the tax is taken somewhat delayed, but that this will now exempt so that foreign operations by U.S. corporations will not be taxed at all by under this new law under U.S. taxation, which seems to mean the opposite, that they would spend more jobs and activities abroad and generate the profits abroad so they won't be taxed.
Art, thanks for that call. Professor, we'll get your response in a minute. Todd in Janesville is with us and has a similar point. Todd, go ahead.
Yeah, I guess hypothetically, if I'm a chief financial officer of, say, a General Electric or a General Motors, and I'm going to bring $3 billion back from overseas to the U.S., at a 15% tax rate, the board of directors is going to have my head. Am I missing something here? Or, I mean, the $3 billion, that would be a $450 million tax.
Todd, thanks for that. Professor?
Well, both of them are more or less on target when Art points out that there's a new tax scheme for future earnings by corporations when those earnings occur abroad. He's exactly right. They're moving to a system called territoriality, which means you pay taxes where you earn the money, more or less. And so international corporations that earn a great U.S. corporations that do an awful lot of international business but earn an awful lot of their money abroad will not have to pay U.S. taxes on it as they do now.
Of course, the argument is that they keep it parked abroad because they don't want to bring it in and have to pay taxes on it. So a second provision, not to be confused with that first important change, is this 15% rate for repatriating cash that's already sitting abroad. It's a temporary period where they can bring the money back in. Todd suggests that they won't even bother with that because they've got to pay that 15% tax. But many of them might want to use that money to invest in the United States. And so there may be some that now find it cheaper to bring that money back in. They can use it for investment. They can pay dividends. So there may be stockholders who want it repatriated, even if it's taxed. And so some of it will be repatriated. Surely not all of the trillions that are sitting abroad will be repatriated. But territoriality, paying taxes where you earn the money, and repatriation are separate subjects.
We have an email from Gerald who says, an article in today's Wall Street Journal says AT&T announced yesterday that they will give 300,000 employees a $1,000 bonus because of the tax cut. Wells Fargo and Fifth Third Bank are raising their minimum wage to $15 per hour because of the tax bill. It sounds like some positive results already. I hope the critics acknowledge the positives. On the other hand, you have corporations who have already said, listen, we're going to take this tax bill and we're going to put all that money in our pocket. And you have stories that corporations in America are already sitting on over $2 trillion in cash. So what's the net effect of all this going to be? Some places raise the wages of their low-wage employees or give a bonus. How much effect is that going to have? And is that a sign that this is a positive thing?
Well, I think those are positive developments, and it certainly is good PR for those firms, but it represents a very small percentage of the tax break that they're going to enjoy because of this tax bill. It puts some money in the pockets of a few Americans. These seem like big corporations, but they represent a very, very small part of the American workforce. Critics of this bill would say that if you really wanted to stimulate the economy and increase jobs, you would have put the money not in the hands of corporations and the well-to-do, but in the hands of middle income individuals and families who would have spent most of the tax break that they would have received. They would have bought a new refrigerator, a new car, and so on, bought real products that create real jobs. These companies are using just a small fraction of their tax cut for higher wages for their employees.
All right. Let's take a call from John in Milwaukee next. John, good morning. Oh, okay. Well, listen, you know what? Let's move on because we're almost out of time and I really wanted to get to this issue. Okay, so we've got the tax cut legislation passed, but now we have the potential government shutdown to deal with. What's going on with that?
Well, it's a little bit chaotic. Congress, of course, is expected to pass spending bills by October 1 when the federal fiscal year begins. They failed to do that, so they extended temporary spending authority until December 9. Then they extended it another 2 weeks, and we're faced now with that deadline. The Speaker Ryan, promises now to extend it until January 19th, doing little else except to attach a separate bill that provides funding for the natural disaster states, Texas, Florida, and improving some funding for Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. That, though, is still up in the air. There are defense hawks among Republicans in the House who want to use even the temporary spending bill to get a long-term increase in defense spending. There are some from Texas and Florida who want even more money for their states. And, of course, there are Democrats whose votes are needed in the Senate because a bill like this can be filibustered, and so you need 60 votes. And some Democrats think that DACA, the Dreamers Act, and some other pieces of legislation, such as correcting the funding for the Obamacare exchanges, really should be a part of a deal. So at this stage, Speaker Ryan is pushing for a clean, small, temporary extension but he's receiving resistance from inside his party and out.
Okay, so this is another game of political chicken that we have seen this play before.
Yes.
So who do you think is going to blink in this instance? Who doesn't? I mean, somebody's going to get the blame if the government actually does shut down, and who even knows exactly what that means? We have seen it before, but who's going to get the blame if this happens, do you think?
Well, I think the Republicans, because they're the majority in both House and the Senate. And if they can't get a bill passed, it's more their doing than the Democrats, that's for sure. I think Ryan is betting on the fact that they just passed this tax bill. All of the members of the Freedom Caucus, the more conservative wing of the House Republicans, voted for the tax bill. And he's telling them, I'm sure, that you'll be spoiling the party if you allow a shutdown to occur here. Just after we passed this tax bill, and we're beating our chests, taking pride in getting such an important piece of legislation passed. I think that argument is going to work with them. In the Senate, where you need at least eight Democrats to vote in favor of the spending extension, things are a lot more complicated. The Republican concerns are just as serious there on the defense side and some other issues. But the Democrats also have more leverage there. So the Senate is more difficult to predict as we stand here now.
All right. So, this is going to produce a lot of news and keep people like me employed for the foreseeable future. Professor, thank you so much for joining us this morning and for sharing your insights with us. I really appreciate it.
Great to be with you, John.
Stephen Smith is a distinguished professor of social sciences, professor of political sciences, and director of the Weidenbaum Center on the Economy, Government, and Public Policy at Washington University in St. Louis. This hour was produced by Bill Martins and Cheryl Gasser, with technical direction by Rachel Vasquez. Tomorrow at this time, we'll talk about the best books of 2017 and invite you to weigh in with your favorites. It's coming up tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. Stick around, more to come. Speaking of books, we'll be talking about one after 8 o'clock. We have criminalized poverty in America. That's what my guest has to say. Stick around for that conversation. Still to come this morning on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.